question, as G said earlier, my name's Abby. I'm one of the psychologists that works with G in the Haematology Psychology Service. And today I've been asked to do a really brief talk with you guys about cognitive assessments. So thinking a little bit about what they are, what they can tell you, and also telling you a little bit about why it's helpful maybe to sometimes offer these to people in a sickle cell service. So a bit of a technical phrase there, cognitive assessments. I will come back and explain what that is very briefly. So if that looks confusing, don't worry. Hopefully in a few minutes, it will no longer be. So what I'm going to try and cover today is just tell you a little bit about what a cognitive assessment is, what sort of things it can tell you, and talk a little bit about why we offer it in sickle cell and why people might need it. So what a cognitive assessment is, it's a way to measure and understand someone's thinking and memory abilities. So when you hear the phrase cognitive or cognition, it basically is referring to the different thinking skills that we all as human beings have. So what a cognitive assessment will do, we'll get an understanding of what kind of thinking skills somebody is best at and what kind of thinking skills they struggle with a little bit more. So everybody, no matter who you are, will always have strengths and weaknesses. So anyone that you pull off the street and do a cognitive assessment with, there will always be things that they are better at and things that they are not by nature, but it could also be to do with things like education or upbringing. And sometimes what can happen is people might notice over their life that the things that they're best at and the things that they find more challenging might change somewhat. And this is often the reason why people might come to a cognitive assessment, which I'll talk to you a bit about in a minute. So when we do a cognitive assessment, often the information it can give us is to help us understand a little bit as to why somebody may find certain activities or certain tasks that you might do in your day-to-day life, some will be easier and some will be harder for them. And a cognitive assessment might be able to give us some clues as to why that is. So normally cognitive assessments will try and look at a variety of different thinking and memory abilities to get a more broad understanding of how somebody performs in lots of different types of activities. And often when people come for a cognitive assessment, they might be coming because there's a particular area that concerns them. But often it's useful to look at all different areas, the key areas that are part of human thinking abilities, because often the things that people find difficult in life might involve more than one thinking skill. So something might involve both memory and mathematics abilities. So you'd want to look at all of people's skills to get an understanding as to why they might find certain things more difficult and why they might find certain things easier. So the main reasons that people tend to end up having a cognitive assessment would be if they themselves or somebody around them, that might be friends, family or health professionals that work with them, are concerned about their thinking and memory abilities. So they might be thinking, I feel like this person should be able to do this activity, but they find it hard. I wonder why they find it difficult. Another key reason people often have a cognitive assessment is if they're finding certain daily tasks a bit more difficult maybe than they used to be. They might think, I used to be really good at remembering my shopping list and now I'm finding it hard, for example. And they might want to know a little bit about why that might be and what kind of things their brain might be better at and find more difficult at this point in their life. Often children might have a cognitive assessment if they're struggling with schoolwork or they're finding some aspect of school quite difficult. Sometimes schools will offer cognitive assessments to children. And sometimes people might have cognitive assessments if something's happened which has led to a change in their brain or damage of some kind. So it might be due to a health condition or it might be due to like an accident or an injury they've received. So some of the key thinking skills or cognitive skills that we look at in a cognitive assessment, I've listed here for you. So the main one often that people think about and are worried about is often memory. So memory essentially is how well we take in information, how well we store it in our brains and how able we are to go back, find that information later to be able to use it. And there's all different types of memory, as you can see here. So we tend to split memory up between visual and verbal memory. So things that you see versus things that you hear. So often people will naturally say, oh, I remember things better if I see a picture of it or if I write them down. Or some people say, if you tell me something, I remember it more than if I read it in your email. So everyone's normally a little bit different there. And we often look at memory both in immediate and a delayed way. So how able is somebody to remember something they've just seen or heard versus how able are they to remember something they saw or heard some time ago? This could be minutes or hours or days ago. And the other type of memory that often we look at in cognitive assessments is called working memory. So working memory is a form of short-term memory, and it's our ability to hold multiple things in our mind at once in order to complete a particular task that's maybe a bit complicated. So a good example of using working memory is when we have to do mental arithmetic or mental maths that you might have had to do in school. So when you do that, you have to hold in mind the different numbers, what you need to do with them, and then when you do that, what number you come out with, and go back to it later. So it's a lot of things we have to be able to hold temporarily in our mind all at once. Some other key skills here on the right-hand side. One of them is attention. So this can be often called concentration. So it's generally our ability to focus on something, usually for an extended period of time, trying to avoid distractions disrupting what we do. Another key skill is processing speed, which is a bit of a technical term for basically how quickly our brain is able to take in and digest and understand a simple piece of information. We've got verbal reasoning skills. So these are our language skills and our ability to solve problems that require words. And we've also got perceptual reasoning there, which is our ability to understand shapes and patterns and use those to solve particular problems. And then the final skill I put here is something called executive function, which is a technical umbrella term for lots of different skills. And this is basically collections of skills that help us to solve quite complicated or difficult problems in life. So these can include skills such as our ability to plan and organise, our ability to switch our focus or attention onto different things at different points in time, our ability to think about something in one way and then change and think about it in another. They usually come under that umbrella term there. So what does an assessment involve? So the assessments are usually conducted by a psychologist or a neuropsychologist. Those are generally the only professionals that are trained to do an assessment like this. And the assessment can vary a lot depending on where you might have that done or what particular concerns you might have about your thinking or memory skills. But generally, most assessments will follow these particular rules here. So normally you'll sit down with somebody and have a discussion about your concerns, what your daily functioning is like, and some background information about you. So this might be things like your educational history, your employment history. It might be things that you enjoy most, things that you find more difficult, a little bit about your family background, all sorts of things like that. You then also would sit down with a psychologist or a neuropsychologist, usually for a session or two, and they'd ask you to complete some puzzles and tasks, and they would observe you doing this. And this is where they get to see how your brain deals with particular types of problems that involve particular types of those thinking skills that we talked about earlier. Often the psychologist might want to have conversations with close friends or family members that you know, obviously with your consent, if you're happy to give that, to get their views on your thinking and memory abilities, what they might observe about you, because sometimes those around us spot things that we don't realise ourselves. And then finally, you normally have a feedback session with your psychologist. Well, they'll talk through your results. They'll explain to you what they show and suggest about the things that your brain is best at and the things that it finds harder. And then really the aim of this is to talk a little bit about different advice they can give you on how to manage with maybe the things that your brain finds harder. So ways to approach tasks that means the things that your brain is not so good at don't have such a big impact on your day-to-day life. And often the psychologist will give you a written report following this meeting, which will outline all of that information, and they might give you things like advice leaflets or self-help materials based on the things that you discuss together. So why might it be helpful for someone with sickle cell to have a cognitive assessment? So with sickle cell, it can sometimes have an effect on our brain. Now, it's important to know that this doesn't happen to every single person with sickle cell. And it's also important to know that some of the changes to the brain that can happen for people with sickle cell can also happen for people without it. So it's not just exclusive to sickle cell, but it can mean that it's slightly more likely sometimes. So the impact of any way that the brain may be affected can be very mild or more significant. As I said, there are plenty of people where there's no effect at all. And very often, somebody's thinking and memory abilities may still stay the same, even if sickle cell has had some impact on the brain. So it might be that you've had a scan or something and something showed up on the brain. It doesn't mean necessarily that the way you approach your day-to-day life or the skills that you have to do that will be any different. The brain's quite adaptable, so sometimes if something changes, the brain finds a workaround. So it doesn't always mean that something will change your day-to-day life. So the key message really is, if you or people around you haven't noticed any changes in thinking memory, you probably don't need a cognitive assessment and probably everything's fine. So I know obviously last week Dr. Kate Gardner came and talked to you guys about strokes and TIA, so I'm not going to go into any detail with that here today, but this is just a list of some of the ways that sickle cell can potentially impact the brain. So I've tried to avoid being too technical here, but you may need to come back and read some of this a little bit later on, but I'll just summarise. So obviously strokes and TIAs are one way that it can, and obviously it's not just people with sickle cell that can have those, but sometimes it increases the likelihood a little. One other way is apoxia, which is a term for low oxygen supply. So sometimes, as you know, with sickle cell, the oxygen in the blood might not be to quite a level that's optimum. And so obviously that can impact all different areas of your body, how well your body's able to perform at that point in time. And so this can be true for the brain. So if the brain has a low oxygen supply, essentially it's just not able to function at its best. And this can, of course, be very temporary. And often when oxygen levels are increased, then those changes are your performance of your brain increases as well. So for some people, low oxygen levels can be an ongoing problem. So that's where they might notice some issues with thinking and memory going forward. Another way can be sometimes with sickle cell, you get the narrowing or blocking of blood vessels. I'm sure you've all heard before. Sometimes this can happen with some of the blood vessels that are linked to the brain. So that's another way that sometimes not enough oxygen or blood gets around. And of course, then the same can be true. The brain maybe doesn't perform to its best level. There's ways sometimes that the brain tries to correct for this. So some of you may have heard of something called Moyer-Moyer, or Kate may have talked a little bit about that. It's basically when, if we have certain vessels in the brain that are blocked, the brain tries to compensate for that and build new vessels around it to try and carry the blood. In one way, that's a good thing. In another, can be difficult because those vessels are quite small and so sometimes can get blocked and break, and that can lead to bleeding in the brain, which is linked to strokes and TIAs. And another way that it can affect the brain as well is just through symptoms like pain and fatigue. So whatever health condition you have, if you experience pain and fatigue, it's pretty likely that there'll be a temporary impact on your thinking and memory skills. It just means, again, that you've not got the energy and resources at that time for your brain to perform to its best level. And sometimes painkillers that we might be on can also have a temporary impact as well, because they can have a sedatory effect. So again, these are some ways that the brain may be impacted by sickle cell, but for many people, this isn't the case. So how might changes in thinking and memory impact your daily life? Well, there's lots of ways that this can happen. So it can impact obviously work and education, things where memory and learning and being able to solve problems quickly are needed quite a lot. Depending on what your hobbies and interests are, it could have an impact on that. You may find that you're able to do those a bit differently than you did before. And also household chores and running a household can be impacted. So if you've got children or a family where you've got to organise where everybody's got to be, you've got to make sure everybody has meals and all those kind of things, that can be quite a lot to keep on top of. And if our brain's not performing to our best, we might find that challenging. Travelling can sometimes be difficult as well. Sometimes the changes people notice is things around memory or being able to find their way to places. So sometimes they can find travelling a bit more difficult. And also it can have an impact on emotional and mental well-being as well. It can be quite stressful if you've noticed changes in your ability. It can be quite stressful if you don't feel you can keep up with certain things that you're expected to as well. And then on the left-hand side, I just put some ideas here about how changes to thinking and memory could make it a bit more difficult to manage your sickle cell or manage your health more generally. And this is one of the key reasons why in health psychology we might be thinking about doing cognitive assessments, because actually if your thinking and memory has changed, it could be helpful to have some advice about that in order to make sure that you're able to stay on top of all your health needs and make sure you're as well as possible. So it might be things like forgetting medical appointments or forgetting to take your medication. If you've noticed change in your memory, you may find it harder to keep on top of those things. Often when you come for medical appointments, there's a lot of complex information that's often given to you. You might have to hold lots of different things in mind or different treatment plans you have for different aspects of your health. That can be really complicated if you don't feel your brain is working to the best of its ability. You might find then that it's harder to make some decisions about your treatment because there's a lot of things to think through and you might not feel as able to do that maybe as you once did. And also you might find it harder to communicate with the medical team, harder to voice what you're thinking, or harder to know what questions to ask because it's more difficult to follow some of the information. And all of these things, of course, quite naturally, as individuals, we may normally find some of these things more challenging than others anyway. These are usually quite difficult things to do. So often we will naturally struggle with at least some of these areas in life. And that's very normal and natural. It only really often becomes a concern for somebody when maybe they feel there's been a change there and something they once were better at, they're finding more hard now. So what I've listed here is just a couple of key strategies that I find myself telling patients that come in for cognitive assessments based on some of the key complaints that often people have when they're looking to have an assessment of their thinking and memory. So one of the top, I suppose, problems that people report is feeling they have poor memory. This might be something they feel they've always had or something they feel has got worse over time. So a couple of the top tips that I tend to give people is if you find your memory is poor, there's a temptation to try and push yourself and build your memory, but I would say in some ways go the opposite way. Ask yourself to remember less. So if memory either naturally or at some point over time is no longer a key strength of yours, then the more you ask yourself to remember, the more tired you're going to make your brain. So anything you can write down, anything you can put in a notebook, put in a diary, ask somebody else to remember, I would recommend doing. It means that whatever you do have to remember, you're much more likely to be able to do that if you've put less burden on your brain. Key ones are setting reminders on your phone, keeping diaries, keeping calendars. These are things that most people find useful to some degree, but if generally you've not got very good memory, you're going to find these really, really helpful. Reminders especially, because sometimes we might forget to look at calendars or look at diaries. So a reminder on your phone is a little bit difficult to ignore if you put a really loud sound at a high volume like I tend to do. And then the final thing I would recommend is any information that you do have to write down, if it's really important and you need to remember it, try and put it somewhere where you can't really miss it. So often what people say is, I forget to look at my diary or I forget to open my calendar. In which case, put those things somewhere where you're going to pass and go to every day. So often people will say the fridge is a really good place to do that because you need to go there a couple of times a day for food and drink. There's no way to avoid it. And if you've got a big calendar there, it's much harder to forget the appointment that's tomorrow or next week. Another key problem people tend to come with is a short attention span or finding they've got poor concentration. So a couple of things I would recommend if you find this is a difficulty for you is to focus on doing one thing at a time. Don't try and multitask. Multitasking is a very, very difficult thing to do anyway. If you've got a short attention span, don't bother. Focusing on one thing at a time, you're probably going to complete it to a much higher quality and probably quicker. If you can minimise distractions where possible, do that. Turn off your phone, turn off the sounds. If you live in a busy street, try and shut the windows. Some people find that putting noise cancelling headphones on, even if they don't play music, can really help. And then if you can, complete tasks in small bursts rather than one go. So if there's a way that you can break down a long task into short steps and actually make sure you have breaks in between, you're probably going to get that task done much better than if you forced yourself to try and sit down for 20, 30 minutes or more and complete the whole thing in one go. Another key area that people often find difficult when they come for a cognitive assessment is finding complex tasks more challenging now. So when I say complex tasks, I think about activities that have lots of different steps. So this can be things like cooking a really complicated meal for a big family to completing your tax return for the year. So whenever you've got a task like that, the first thing I would recommend you do is you try and break that task down into smaller steps. And if you can, write the steps down, tick them off as you go along. What that means is that you don't have to hold all those steps in your mind at once, and you don't have to keep track of where you are in that list of steps. It's all on a piece of paper for you. So you're probably going to find that you're able to complete that task much better and keep track of it all that way. If there's any way that you can get someone to help you, somebody that can maybe do part of the task or assist you with it, absolutely do. It can make life a lot easier. And thirdly, give yourself plenty of time to complete a task. This can be really difficult if maybe you've found your thinking and memory abilities have changed over time. You might be tempted to try and fit in the same things in the same amount of time as you did before and possibly going to find that difficult. So if you're finding something's taking longer, you need a bit more time to think about it than you used to, give yourself more time to do that task. It's going to take the pressure off, which is ultimately going to mean you can focus a lot better on it. And finally, a key complaint that people often have is they might feel more mentally tired than normal. They might find things take a lot more mental effort or things just take longer to do than they used to do. If this is the case, some things I would recommend is thinking about having a good mix in your day of the tasks that are maybe most tiring to you and the ones that are least tiring. So maybe make a list of the different things that you tend to have to do on a daily or weekly or monthly basis and rank them. How mentally exhausting or physically exhausting do I find this activity? And in each day, try not to put lots of the top 10 tiring things. Try and have a mixture, a couple of very tiring things with least tiring things in between. You're probably going to find that you can be more productive generally that way and that your days aren't going to feel quite so exhausting. General advice that's really good if you're feeling mentally fatigued or finding things take a lot more effort is to just make sure when